That pretzel car came out of nowhere.
Oh, God, you still got one on your tail.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 425 for the week of September 19th, 2022. I am Romanian accountant David T. Cole, and I'm here with cluster cuss Sarah D. Bunting.
That's bull crap.
Helpful hologram Tar Ariana.
Let me look that up.
And bank robber, wait, friend, wait, undercover agent Catherine Von Arendarg.
Wait, what if I'm actually a rom-com lead?
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a TV critic at Vulture. She is a co-host of the Appointment Television podcast. You have heard her here before. It's Catherine Van Arendarg. Welcome, Woo! Catherine.
Welcome back, Catherine. Yay!
Hooray.
Jersey quorum.
Woo.
That's right. We are here to talk about Quantum Leap, parentheses, 2022. And here is what you need to know about that. Ben, Raymond Lee, is a Los Angeles scientist of some kind, celebrating his engagement to Addison, Caitlin Bassett, when he gets a mysterious text, slips out of the party to go to his lab, suits up to get into the Quantulator, and when he opens his eyes again, he's behind the wheel of a van in Philadelphia in July 1985. Suddenly, Addison also appears in hologram form to help him because she also works on his team. But Ben has no idea who he is, who she is, or why any of this is happening to him. Back at the lab, the rest of the team is also flummoxed about how and why Ben decided to leap and how they're supposed to get him back. Only one episode has aired so far on NBC. That is all your co-hosts have seen. I don't know if Catherine has seen more. She is nodding.
Nope.
She has not. Let's do the Chen check-in very quickly. Yes or no, Catherine, should our listeners watch the show?
Not yet.
Okay, Sarah.
Nah.
Dave.
No.
No, for me as well. Woof.
Aggressively NBC
oh
is the
God.
Tagline I'll offer
oh,
them for their
so,
poster.
So, yes.
It is. Let's get into it. But first, Catherine, I thought of you to be our guest for this episode. I knew you loved the original series. You talked to Scott Bakula about it in 2019, what? Which we will link in the show notes. Briefly tell our listeners what it is about that show that does it for you.
Well, for one, it is. Did we all see that meme that went around on, it was like a clip that went around on Twitter recently where it was like, wow, TV used to have all the time in the world. And it's just like an opening yeah. of a guy slowly like getting out of his car, closing yes. the car yes. door, and then strolling all the way down a driveway into
yep.
the
Checks
rising
his shoe
action.
For dog shit. Yes, yep. totally.
Yes. This happened on Melrose Place that I watched last week where we watch, we watch Amanda and Kyle walk through a restaurant and up some stairs for a good, yeah. healthy yeah. 10 seconds.
Also see that Columbo episode we watched where yeah. like Columbo has to like make the bed to sleep in first. Anyways, yes.
yeah. right. Yeah. So there are definitely ways that like watching the original Quantum Leap, it is full of moments like that. It is full of all of this. Like probably you didn't need every second of these scenes to really mm-hmm. tell this story. And yet, like watching them rhythmically, you just have such a really fascinating and often rich and detailed experience of what these scenes are, what these people's lives are. As we all know, the thing that makes our lives feel real to us is that we have to live through all the really boring parts as yeah. well as the exciting parts. And because the premise of Quantum Leap is Scott Bakula jumps into a random person's life and then has to figure it out, there is something really important, I think, about all of the baggy middle nonsense that doesn't really need to be there, and yet without it does not feel like you are actually in the tangible experience of somebody else's perspective. Mm-hmm. The premise of the show, if somehow you don't know, is Scott Bakula entered into some incredible jumpsuit blue lighting situation yeah. mm-hmm. that has teleported his consciousness and kind of his body, sort of. Like he has physical experiences, but we're not entirely certain what's happened to his physical body. He's teleported into the perspective of all kinds of other people. And because the show is made in the 80s, you can imagine the sorts of very special episode experiences that he tends to have. Pregnant women, people who are not of his race and ethnicity. There is an episode where he is in the body of a disabled person. There are episodes where he is a soldier who is gay and hasn't told anyone. I mean, there are all kinds of sort of social justice-y ways that it plays those scenarios out.
Plus monkeys.
Yes. And then there are also bits of like early 80s long arc kinds of like, and some connect to his own life, and you'll never know which episode you're going to get that might actually be the one that be like, and so there are some extremely moving ones where it's, you know, he meets his father, you know, mm-hmm. you can imagine.
Yeah.
There are a lot of reasons I love the show, but I think the core of it is that it is, and my argument for it has always been that it is actually quite radical to take a straight white man and be like, what if over and over again you had to be somebody else?
Right.
And then just right. watch him again and again and again through the like procedural episodic rhythms of the way television worked in the 80s, come up against the like immovable brick wall that is his assumed privilege and the fact that it no longer exists in many of these scenarios.
Right.
Great show. Great weird show.
And yet, now we have this, which seems to like vastly misunderstand what made the first show good.
In so many yeah. ways.
And also doesn't understand that we all understand what the premise is. Like,
right.
this was very pilot-y, and I will give a certain amount of latitude for that. But in this case, it was A, not necessary because we all like get the premise or could get it from context. Mm-hmm. And B, like Catherine said, like they're very much in the science fictionalism of it all and yeah. not in the like empath procedural right. aspect of it all, which is like, that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. And pursuant to that, like maybe they looked at the quote chemistry between the leads and were like, maybe we should make it more sciencey, but like I don't know, like I think they didn't know where their story was. Like Catherine said, that's a really good point, but the pilotiness of this was like, whenever there's, you know, we watched a screener and there's like some ADR substitutions to drop all this like science position. And I was like, this is actually more compelling because it's just some fucking PA rushing through it to get it yes. done so they could drop the screener on the press site.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, at least everybody here understands what this particular assignment is. Like, don't. It's like we went into the Tronatron 3000 and then this thing. And it's like, this isn't what we're here for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spending so much time in a poorly lit lab with a self-consciously assembled crew of super smart weirdos did not really make sense to me until I looked up that the showrunner is Martin Giro, who one of his other credits is the NBC drama Blind Spot. And then it was a lot of things
there,
locked
yeah,
into
there it is.
Place for me. Did you see evidence of his artistic stamp here as well, Sarah? Because I know you watched that show.
Which is Tattooed Lady in a Bag.
Yes.
For those that don't
yeah,
remember.
Because I had to watch that show. I think it just ended like
really?
Last year. Like wow. it went on for a while.
It was
one of those
way
gag shows that's yeah. like 62-year-olds in Peoria like it, so we guess we'll just let it ghost ship until everyone else gets better jobs. I don't know what happened
mm-hmm.
and don't care. Yeah, that too had a couple of interesting elements and a couple of the weirdos were compelling, but as is so often the case with these like big idea procedurals, like often the lead characters are fairly bland so that the audience can, in theory, project onto them. Mm-hmm. So they don't have the courage of their convictions because it's a network procedural.
Right.
Then the story follows them and the people around the periphery who might be interesting are just given this like tab A slot B shit to do. I mean, it's an NBC show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
QED.
I mean, the pilotiness of it is something I was also really, really, really frustrated by. because it doesn't even feel like it has the courage of being one pilot.
Right.
It wants like 12 different premises to all get kind of shoehorned in there as though you don't, it's afraid we're not going to have the patience to eventually realize that he is in like a relationship with the Al character, or that we're not going to have the patience to realize that there are like other twists that we're supposed to be expecting, or, you know, in a network scenario where it was maybe, you know, 2001 and we knew that we were going to get a 24 episode season, you can feel the kind of surprises at the end of this pilot actually being a, you know, episode 10 sweeps week kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And instead they're just shoehorning all of this stuff. And it is breathless, this thing. I mean, single second that they have, they are just cramming in a little fun fact for you. And so you're just spinning over and around, waiting for it to just take a beat and be like, whoa, it's weird that I am in the body of another person right now.
Right.
But how much they do is interesting. I mean, interesting in a why kind of way, which is like, you have the original, which, I mean, I guess if I had the nutshell, it'd be like, it's goofy, it's heartfelt, it's fun, it's all fish out of water and all things Catherine said at the start. And then in the new show, and that's like the show, like original Quantum Leap is, it's Sam Beckett's hour in wherever. Mm-hmm. And the only part in that series where we really see what's going on outside of that is in the pilot for like a half a second where Al's driving his Lisa Frank car to the lab. And then this one is like, you know what's more interesting than time travel? If it was time travel and office politics, it was time travel and worn out government conspiracy and infighting plot lines and all these things that, as Catherine said, they jammed into the first hour of the show. And none of the extra parts are as interesting as time travel out of body experiences.
Not at all.
You have your show already.
And they're wasting a lot of time trying to create tension around whether he's going to die.
Yeah.
Like, he's not. He's the lead character.
Yeah.
Think about something else.
And he's in a relationship with his hologram person who's leading him through, but he doesn't remember her at all. And you're like, that's too many things already.
Yeah.
That's too many things.
I mean, my feeling at the end of this was like, why can't things just be goofy anymore? Like, why does all of this need to be over-explained? I mean, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is not a perfect analogy for this, but one of the things that makes it fun to watch is that it doesn't try to science-ify its time travel concept. Like, they just have them be like, let's remember later to come back 5 minutes before this and do X. And they do. We don't have to see it. We just trust that they do. Because who cares? Like, it's already time travel. Just be ridiculous. Like, I know we all want to believe in science or whatever, but, like, that doesn't have to extend everywhere, including to this show. Like, Dave and I watched the original series pilot last night, and I think are going to continue rewatching this series. All 5 seasons of the original series are on Peacock for those who want to just get into that.
And that's the takeaway. Don't watch the...
Yeah, absolutely.
Just watch, go back and watch the original, because it's still good.
It's so charming. Like, even the bad special effects, it's like, aw, and they're bad.
Which weren't any better in this. And also, this network had Journeyman and killed it. I mean, I'll get into that in Around the Dial, but...
Yeah.
There's so much better to watch with this same spirit, including, honestly, like the first 10 episodes of Blindspot were sort of interesting.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the pilot, speaking of special effects, where a plane goes haywire and you can actually see the invisible hand go ching chong to the plane in midair. Like, it does like 2 180 turns in the spot of about 3 seconds. It's like, oh, perfect.
One of the shots of it is backwards. Like, it has U.S. Air Force in reverse on the side of the nose. Like, and it's fine. Awesome. Like, some of the stuff is charming. Like, we like it for a reason. Anyway. I don't know how seriously I would have taken this under any circumstances, but when we got to the Philadelphia street, I said to Dave, that's where Chris Pontius's penis was menacing everyone in the opening of Jackass Forever, because they're on the same back lot. It didn't help.
No.
Let's briefly talk about some specifics. Ernie Hudson plays Herbert magic Williams, the boss of this secret project. He is worried about Ben. He's also worried about losing their funding if anyone in the military finds out that they lost him. And we see him sternly refuse the resignation of the security chief, who plainly sucks at her job if all this happened. So we know he's a good guy. But, like, do we care? I didn't. Like, honestly, the lab stuff was what bugged me the most, because so much is spent on it, and who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit, indeed? Also, in the lab, they have the closest match to Wonder Woman's supercomputer Ira that I've seen on network TV since Wonder Woman. I was very impressed that they just managed to bring in, like, tarp-covered industrial shelving from Home Depot, put some blinking lights on. It's like, what's that? That's our supercomputer. It was great. It made no sense whatsoever. I love the whole thing. I mean, you know, in the abstract.
Mm-hmm. This is what TV writers think a server farm looks like. Let's put some twinkle lights on it. Ridiculous. Plus, Ernie Hudson just first taking it all the way to the bank.
Good all the way to the bank. The other thing about the lab that really made me so frustrated, I mean, because the thing is, in the time traveling scenario, like, he jumped back, he has no idea what's going on, he doesn't remember anything, which they have to do because it can't be the Scott Bakula situation where there's just, like, it's new technology,
right?
So they don't understand it. It has to instead be that he doesn't remember. And so at least then you get some, like, here is a relatively reasonable way to throw in some expositional dialogue. But the lab expositional dialogue is egregiously bad. They're constantly saying things like, well, but don't you remember about the fact that we built this entire machine and he just wasn't supposed to get into it yet? And then the other person has to be like, of course I remember. I've been working here for 10 years. Like, it's just, it's so frustrating.
Oh my God. And also, again, who cares? Like, fill in this stuff in whatever, episode 5
or
episode 8, or don't.
Yeah.
Like, it is a procedural. We don't need the backstory. We really don't. This is like fucking Noah Benson.
Yes. Ernie Hudson is our biggest name. Everyone else in the cast, other than the person who played Desire in Sandman, was people that I'd never seen before. And this is not to say you need a star to make your show. Shows make stars, and we've seen this countless times. But everyone is so forgettable, and we've already alluded to her, but Caitlin Bassett as Addison is so blah. Like, getting the two of them back together, if that's what's supposed to be driving my interest in the show, it doesn't. Like, I don't buy the two of them together at all. And she is, like, you know, you could do with her, like, maybe she's a nerd because she works on this project, like, do a, you know, Tina Majorino and Veronica Mars type of thing, or she's a troop and she's like Kobe Smulders in the MCU or something, but she's like neither. Yeah. She's nothing. And which is crazy, when I looked her up, she is a troop. Like, she did 2 deployments in Afghanistan. She is ex-military, and she seems like a Bowdoin catalog model to me. Like, she is just nothing.
Yeah. They are finally going to get together, and the chemistry is going to be such that he'll, like, accidentally just, like, kiss her eyeball or something like that. Like, that's where it's at. Like, I you know, buy
it already seemed iota. Like that at the engagement party, that it was, like, 2 slightly stale pitas resting on top of each other.
Yeah.
Like, am I hungry now? Yeah, kind of. For that? No.
No. Mm-hmm. Nope.
And that's where that is, kind of. I mean, they're all perfectly attractive, competent people, but that's, like, exactly down the middle of the fairway. It's not interesting. It's not worth making time for.
The casting of the central character also, I think, is a fundamental misread of what works about Scott Bakula in the original. I think it's very easy to look at that formula and be like, oh, he's just a regular white guy, and so the thing is that he ends up in the lives of all these much more interesting people, and so he has to take on their scenarios. But it is only interesting because he has a character and he has all of these little quirks and personality. I mean, he has so much charisma as he like is staring in the mirror, and he is frustrated by things and he is delighted by things. And so to instead empty all that out and be like, what we need is a vessel, and then the vessel will just show up in these other people's lives. You have no reason to care about, like, why he is anywhere that he shouldn't be, or why he is upset. I hate that they made Al a hot lady, even though that is like the most obvious adaptation choice that they possibly could have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the whole thing was cast by stock photos.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also the big other big miss, or at least the easy get, was to keep the theme and some semblance of the original intro, which is pretty iconic, even mm-hmm. though in the original it went on for 3 minutes. Yes. I was like, when are they actually going to get to the credits? And this intro in the original is like 2.5 minutes, and we find starring Scott Bakula. It's like, oh, and now it's like the second half of the theme, but I still enjoyed it. And this new one is just like, it's 2 seconds in, you know, Final Cut Pro 3D text extrude, quadruple, and then we're done. It's like, oh, come on, guys. Like, you had it right there. You have the voiceover. You have the goofy font. You have, like, you know, the whole I'm getting wind up my butt blue light thing. And they biffed it. They biffed it big.
They did. I think the thing that most annoyed me, actually, I mean, I spent the entire episode being annoyed. And then I was ready to just be like done with it.
Yeah.
And then he leaps into another body. And then instead of saying, oh boy, he says, oh shit.
Oh yes.
And I was so mad I wanted to punch things.
Thank you for bringing that up, because I forgot about
throw
that.
Throw pillows in the room. I mean, it is just a classic. Like, you can see, all right, this is 2022's Quantum Leap. We're not going to be like gosh darn goofy. We're not going to be friendly family fodder. We're going to be adult. We're going to recognize that the people who are watching us are like serious people. We're going to have them speak like a real person does. And they're going to say, oh shit, when they listen to the thing. But he can't. You're an NBC procedural. Mm-hmm. This is not where grown-ups live. Hello.
Yeah. Whenever they try to, for some reason, like, you'd think that CBS would be worse at trying to edge things up. But in that case, like, it's so how do you do, fellow kids, that it's almost amusing. Yeah. NBC's attempts to do it are just like inevitably, like, there's Dave's pet peeve, the see-through computer monitor every time. And like just terrible special effects and cutting to an ad break in the middle of a swear word. Like, they just never learn that that's not your game.
No,
don't try to play. Don't try to play that.
No. Well, don't try to watch the show. It's bad.
Mm-mm.
Watch the original.
Yeah.
It is time to go around the dial. First stop is with Tara. Tara, what do you have for us today?
Well, we talked about the first season of Losa Spookies as a lead topic when it premiered more than three
Crazy.
Earth years ago. That was June 2019, it makes much more sense to premiere the show at this point in the year, given its subject matter, since the season will end on October 21st, right in the heart of a spooky season. For those who don't remember, it is set in an unspecified Spanish-speaking country. They shoot it in Chile, but they never say that's where they are. The titular Espookies are a horror group that creates sort of supernatural special effects for clients' specific and generally weird purposes, for example. In the first season, we saw them fake an exorcism for a priest and pretend to be aliens so that a scientist would not lose her grant. Spoiler, she comes back in season two. Ronaldo is the de facto leader of Losa Spookies. He is a fanatic who loves horror to the exclusion of all other pursuits, most notably romance, as we learned in the first season. He and his friend Ursula seem to have the most actual technical knowledge in the group, and they are joined by her sister Tati and Andres, who are played by Ana Fabrega and Julio Torres, who also co-created the show with Fred Armisen, who plays Ronaldo's uncle. Tati is either a simpleton or a genius. Andres is a former chocolate heir, now badly adapting to having been disowned by his parents at the end of season one. So when the screeners came through, Dave and I watched the first one, and then halfway through we're like, oh, we forgot how much continuity there is. Like, I vaguely remembered what happened in season one, kind of not really. So we watched the premiere, then we went back and watched all of season one, which is easy to do. There was only six. They are a tight half hour. And then we pick back up with season two, watch the rest of the screeners. I tweeted this at the time, but I strongly recommend, if you've not watched season one since it was on, in addition to refreshing you on story stuff, it really rewards rewatching. It's just as funny and weird the second time. For example, I remembered them faking a tourist attraction in a seaside town by having Tati dress like Marilyn Monroe and yell Yabba Dabba Doo, but not the attraction they were replacing in this town was an owl in a wig, because the wig had not been properly secured and it fell off the owl. Anyway, Without spoiling season two too much, it picks up with the evil TV station's plans for Ursula. It rejoins Tati and her marriage to Andre's ex, and it replaces Andre's friendship with Water's shadow with a friendship with the moon, who is played by Yalitza Aparicio from Roma. It also gives us a thread that runs through the whole season as Ronaldo's haunted by the ghost of a beauty queen who is killed on live TV by getting impaled by an anchor. Season sure. also oh continues. This is in the cold open, so it's not much of a spoiler. But the season also continues teasing out what is actually going on with Tati, mentally or neurologically or paranormally. We always see her with a little baguette purse. It turns out that may be more than a style choice. But it's mostly just really silly and dumb. If you are missing What We Do in the Shadows and you need another vaguely gothy sitcom that is only barely tethered not only to our reality, but its own internal logic, you should watch this show. It is on HBO Friday nights or HBO Max, whenever. Dave, anything to add? Obviously, you watch this with me.
Yeah, just that my favorite little twist surprise of season two is what they did with Water's shadow mm-hmm. and where she goes in season two, because you think you're done with her and yeah. then they just like, what? And they're like, all right, I'm here for the ride. And it was yep. great. It's a really good show. It's one of my favorite shows of the past few years. It just like really tickles my nonsense funny bone in a very particular way. And you're right, if you're into What We Do in the Shadows, there's a very good chance that you'll also like Los Espookies. It's a great show.
Yes.
Super weird, super funny. Like, What We Do in the Shadows is weird, but this seems like tapped at the source weird. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yes.
But you oh, know yeah. what I mean? Like,
it's more
sourced
magic
locally
realism.
From weird waters mm-hmm. is like the, yes. you know, the label on the show.
Yeah. And I mean, to our point from the lead topic, it does not over explain anything. If mm-hmm. anything, it under explains. It's yeah. just like, this is how it is. You're like, all right. Like, mm-hmm. people accepting these effects at face value and being convinced by them is like, okay, I believe that in this world that would happen. It's a great, weird show. So please check it out. For my plug, relevant to listeners of this podcast, every other month, the Listen to Sassy Club, the Patreon for our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy, watches a contemporary to the month we're talking about TV presentation, and it is time to vote on that. I'm just refreshing our poll right now. Leading the poll is a TV movie called My Boyfriend's Back, in which Judith Light, Jill Eikenberry, and Sandy Duncan play a 60s girl group reuniting for a TV special. It is written by the same woman who wrote our 2 months ago presentation, which was a TV movie called Take My Daughters, Please, with Rue McClanahan and Marlena from Days. I forget the actress's name now, but she had four gorgeous daughters she was trying
Deirdre
to marry
or something.
Thank you. Yes, Deirdre Hall, among others. So it's either going to be that or the preppy murder TV movie starring Laura Flynn Boyle, William Baldwin, and Danny Aiello. Wow. So-
I mean, guys, you need to vote for that shit because it goes through so many so bad it's good revolutions.
Mm-hmm.
I will be there for all of us.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, make sure you're in the Listen to Sassy Club to vote. That is listentosassy.com/club. It's $5 a month. You get tons of perks. That's only one of them. There's also stickers, full issue scans, access to the Discord, many, many more. So listentosassy.com/club if you want to join us for TV movie watch-alongs.
All right, Catherine, what have you been watching on TV lately?
There's a couple things that I want to point out. The first is Reservation Dogs, which I am just yelling about constantly.
So
I think
good.
It's one of those shows that I know, you know, is critically acclaimed. It's not like there's been zero coverage of how great it is. And yet the proportion of how many people are yelling about it constantly to how good it is extremely off. Like mm-hmm. it should be yelled about at just every moment of every day. I watched the screeners as soon as they show up in my inbox. It is probably the only show I can say that about right now. Like, that email hits and I am just out. Like, nobody gets to talk to me for half an hour. I think it does something that, I mean, I am very, very, very fond of streaming comedies that have figured out how to use episodes in ways where you're like a little bit unsure who the focal character is going to be. I don't think it should go all the way toward the like Atlanta season three. Like, I have no idea what actually is how this connects to the main thing.
Right.
But I think Reservation Dogs is a really perfect example of how you can kind of gently pass the baton among a lot of people without it feeling like you have completely exited the world of the show.
Oh, that cheese episode this
That's season. What I was just about to say. That that one went right on my toucanon list because it was really special and made me cry.
Oh my God. I just watched the screener for episode 9, though, so maybe it's hard to know who the canon one is. Anyhow, and the other thing is that I think it is truly nailing what I think of as the like classic streaming comedy tone, which is incredibly funny, but often for ways that for reasons that you can't really put your finger on, and characters that are end up in absurd situations, and yet most of the time you're weeping. I mean, it is just exquisite. I think the performances have only gotten stronger, and everyone should be yelling about it constantly so that we get like as many seasons of it as they decide that they want to make. So that is the one thing. The other thing is that I have been rewatching Halt and Catch Fire. Halt and Catch Fire, a good show. I recapped it for Vulture, the later seasons. It was one of the sort of early pieces of writing that I did for Vulture, and I sort of knew at the time that it was great, but I never really had the binge watch experience of the show where you just got to sit and kind of let it all wash over you. And I now, watching it, am just aching for any kind of show on TV right now that has a similar, I don't even want the same premise. I just want like a bunch of adults who are adults who have real conflict with each other that is incredibly monumental for their lives, but that is not the world is being destroyed by aliens.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
I do know.
And I ideally, like, that some of it also is not, I mean, some of it is romantic, but like that there are ways to have obstacles and frustrations and challenges in the way that you as a person interact with the world that are somewhere between, you know, I stubbed my toe and the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And I just desperately miss. I think it happens more in comedy spaces now than in drama spaces.
Well, I was just going to say The Bear is kind of like that, but
Yes. I just have been loving rewatching it so much. Also, I want all of their clothes, which is a problem.
Where is Halt and Catch Fire now? Is it on Netflix still?
Sadly, the only place that you can watch it is via AMC Plus, which I do as a like add-on to my Prime subscription or something. Can I say that it's worth getting an AMC Plus subscription for?
Well,
I
mean, you also get Moonhaven, so yes.
So yes, we're all out here in
the world.
That's
what the 7-day free trial is for, people. Find a long weekend, rack up your 7 days, make a plan.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm. Just saying. Yeah, so those are the things I have been watching lately. I don't have anything in particular to plug. I like being able to write all kinds of different stuff for my job. I wrote a profile recently of a cartoonist named Kate Beaton that I was really happy with, so you could go read that. And if you want to happen to experience Vulture in real life, Vulture Fest will be back in LA in November. So you can look up those dates. I think it's like the 12th and 13th. I will probably be there. There's a nice pool. There are drinks. It's a fun time.
I wanted to say I really enjoyed your recent piece that was basically like, what is Welcome to Wrexham for? Who is it for? Why does it exist? So thank you for that as well.
It is my pleasure, but also my pain to have had to watch that many episodes of that show.
Oh, I know.
Yep.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Journeyman. It's back. It never left my heart. Also, it's not back. Little background. I have stand for this 2007 time travel action drama from NBC forever. It starred Kevin McKidd as migraine time traveler Dan, Gretchen E. Golf as his wife, Reed Diamond as his estranged brother, and Moon Bloodgood as his late fiance / guardian angel. Spoiler at a question mark. After watching the new Quantum Leap pilot, I decided to track down Journeyman through methods because it is not currently streaming anywhere, which is a shame. Also not a surprise, because what inspired me to do so, watching NBC's Quantum Leap, it's basically a close enough concept. A guy gets portaled around to different times in order to help slash save people. The difference is being, A, he isn't leaping into people in Journeyman. B, it's much less intentional in Journeyman. And C, it's done way better and more interestingly in Journeyman, certainly in the pilot. I wasn't sure this aspect of it would hold up because I have not seen a frame of the shtees since Bush was president. But in my memory, it was expeditious and credible as to building this world and the concept, and only hinting at backstory without sacrificing pace. There is some heavy-handedness in this pilot with the remember this detail later, O viewer, as we linger upon it. And the music cues are only slightly less pointed than Quantum Leap 22, but it's just way better at nailing, first of all, having charismatic people be attracted to each other on screen, and also the ordinary people reacting to extraordinary circumstances thing. It's not perfect, but it's way better than you would expect from a mid-aughts network drama that contained a Moppet. The ending of that pilot, like, got me all over again. And then, like, the rain machine starts up. And I was like, I'm such a sucker. Ew. But also sniff. It's extremely efficient in terms of getting civilians on board with the supernatural doings that are occurring. The acting is a gazillion times better. What should have happened is that NBC should have freed this from streaming jail instead of rebooting Quantum Leap. But because they decided to pay out the wazoo for a whole new batch of songs instead of clearing all the old ones in Journeyman, Journeyman is never coming to a Peacock Plus near you. It's very sad. Even the DVDs are like, you can get some Region 2 ones for like €38. It's rough stuff. But if you happen to stumble onto a through methods plane, take the ride. It's good. It was only a like half season and RIP.
Is it Quantum Leap where he has to fix somebody's life, or is it like what was that show? Voyagers, I think, where they had to like fix history, or is it neither?
It's sort of a combination of both. And it's not clear, like, it may be part of a larger project for his late fiance who, like, faked her death and then died anyway. Like, it's dense.
That's the way it goes.
And
they're pretty cheerful about just being like, oh, and then also this. And then sometimes Reed Diamond will almost, like, look at the camera like, can you believe this shit? But it's sort of charming in that way. Anyway, this is so much better. It was so much better. And I got like retroactively mad at the Quantum Leap reboot after watching also, this pilot.
A great argument once again for like why you need the lead person to have charisma rather than to just be a blank slate to cast.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think they accidentally did that in McKid's case. And he's 100%. Like, this is a Brit. And he's like, you know, blonde looking and sort of has this everyman look. But it's Kevin McKidd. Like, that guy doesn't fuck around. So, speaking of fucking around looking for hard to find items, if you are looking for an out of print true crime book, I can help. That's at exhibitbbooks.com, my secondhand true crime bookshop. I also stock some ephemera. I'm at Exhibit B Books on most of the socials, or you can call or text me at Reed14. 1034. Yes, 1034 is the police code for riots. No, I didn't mean to do that.
Wow.
Google Voice has its ways. Read 14-1034 if you're looking for something or just need a better rate on a book than you can find on eBay. I am happy to try to help.
He doesn't like you. He's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun. That's plain to see. Time to ask, will Dave hate this?
Probably.
Today in Will Dave Hate This, Werewolf by Night, a special coming to Marvel Studios via Disney Plus in October of this month. Sarah, you have a view on this.
I do. I feel like I run into trouble with Will Dave Hate These because I have this knee-jerk hate reaction of my own to some of them. And then I'm like, I'll say he hates it. And then I think about it more and I'm like, well, he won't not hate it, which is not totally the same thing. But I believe I took this position because, first of all, lesser Marvel doesn't tend to sauce Dave's plate, so to say. This is sort of a weird project that could go either way. I believe the director is Michael Giacchino, who won an Oscar for the Up score, but has never directed anything before. Co-writers come from Hawkeye and Moon Knight, which I think Dave was not huge fans of. The trailer seems terribly pleased with itself, not necessarily without cause, but I feel like it's not necessarily going to rise to the level of fiery Three Chili Pepper Loathing, but I don't think he's going to like it. So that's where I'm going to leave it. I'm probably going to be outvoted on this. Tara, you think he will not hate it?
For the record, I wasn't really jazzed about Moon Knight, but I did enjoy Hawkeye for what it was.
Okay.
I said he will not. As soon as I loaded up the trailer and saw that they created a special video treatment for Marvel Studios special that was very evocative of the CBS special presentation graphic that I know Dave likes, I was like, okay, this is already going to put this into Dave's appealing to him specifically space. The fact that it is a special makes it likelier, not entirely likely, but who knows, that it won't do the Marvel sell-through thing that is so annoying on all of its TV shows.
That's true.
It has a very Ed Wood, the movie, kind of look, which is a movie Dave enjoyed, as I recall. And I think the more self-conscious Marvel things tend to appeal to Dave more so than the direct superhero stuff, for example, Hawkeye. I mean, Hawkeye is a superhero too, but not one that has, you know, extraordinary superpowers. So I said he will not hate this. Does that mean he will like it? Not necessarily. I think he will not hate it, though. Dave.
Yeah, we're on like 0.5 away from middle, both of us.
So. You're both center parties. You're just one center hate, one center like. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
What about that special presentation? It threw me because I understand obviously what they're doing is this is a take on the CBS spinning Oh Boy, It's Time for Charlie Brown special presentation stinger.
Yeah.
But also like the subject matter of the actual special is obviously a throwback to, you know, old horror movies.
Sure.
And when on TV would they have a special presentation of this? Or is it supposed to be like a Wizard of Oz type of annual ritual thing inside of the Marvel Universe? Mm-hmm. It was a bit of a disconnect there. It didn't really bother me too much, but I felt like somebody really wanted to do that special presentation thing, and this was like the thing they could most attach it to before they died or something. It seemed out of place to me.
Before they faked their death and then died for real.
But I would like to introduce now what I am calling the Southwestern egg roll theory of Marvel output, especially in this TV era and phase, what are they, phase four?
I think that's right.
So, Southwestern egg rolls is something you can get, I think Chili's, maybe Chili's. Applebee's, one of those. And it's an appetizer, which is from a family restaurant, and it's a marriage of Santa Fe style cooking and, you know, Chinese cooking, and excels at neither. And I feel like this also is happening with a lot of the Marvel output, especially, you know, since the pandemic. And it's like, it's a superhero film, but it's also a sitcom, She-Hulk. It's a superhero film, but it's also a martial arts movie, like
Shang-Chi.
Thank you. It's a study of emotion and a superhero movie, like WandaVision. Or this one is a pulp horror thing, but it's also a Marvel superhero movie. And then I think the Guardians of the Galaxy's got like a holiday special coming out later in this year. And they're never best of breed, right? Like it's always like, oh, okay, I see what they did there. They're marrying two different things. But as a sitcom, She-Hulk is okay. And as a superhero, you know, study, it is also okay. It doesn't make them bad, but it never makes them great. And that is like the Southwestern egg roll to a T. You're like, yeah, okay, I get it. They put some Anaheim peppers inside of a wonton roll. Congratulations. And I feel like this is going to be probably more of that, where it's an interesting exercise. But at the end of it, you're like, well, I wish Del Toro was in charge of that. Or I wish like Wes Craven could come back from dead and do this.
No one wishes Del Toro was in charge of it. My God.
I think a lot of people
Del Toro.
Do.
I was thinking Del Taco because you said Southwestern egg rolls.
Oh my
Del
God,
Taco.
Amazing.
What? Wait,
sponsored
hang on.
By
Guillermo Hold Del Taco. That's best of something.
You thought
what.
I was wanted to put a tertiary taco restaurant chain.
Listen.
Chain.
And
in
why
charge
not?
Of this Marvel project.
Tertiary Taco is Dave. is to Dave as medium talent is to Bill Murray screaming in the hallway.
I would absolutely not hate to see Del Taco try to put together this project. As
we should also bring back the age of TV where it was like sponsored by Palmolive. Exactly. And then you get the Palmolive hour of whatever. Del Taco's hour of Marvel horror sounds fine. Well,
picking up on the special presentation thing, those were always Dolly Madison cakes and stuff like that. So I think we've got the in to make it happen in universe already.
Jesus.
So anyways, there's always better superhero flicks and there's always better like XYZ mix-in genre stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just going to be another one of those. Not great, you know, entertaining. So,
but not hateful.
But not hateful. And even though my answer, like, Dave, where are you going to grade this on 1 to 10? That's not The Exercise, even though I'm sure it would be slightly left or right of center. Mm-hmm. But this is, Dave will not hate this. But I don't think he's going to love it either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, everybody, on the next Extra, Extra Hot Great 203, we answer the question, who should die? We have thoughts. And then right here, the next EHG Prime is a look back on the first three episodes of Star Wars Andor with Never Not Funny's Matt Belknap. Don't miss it.
Today's extra credit topic comes to us from Laura F. It is titled Another Sad Divorce Statistic, and Laura writes, 50% of marriages end in divorce, yet TV marriages rarely do. Provide a TV couple who you think should divorce, explain why, and give one or both divorcees a new partner, either from their TV show or any other show. Now, I went with a show I'm pretty sure is going to get repeated in here. If not, I will I'll add a tag at the end. But I'm going with Logan and Marcia Roy of Succession. Why should they divorce? I feel like it's obvious. They spent a lot of season three off screen discussing how they were going to divorce and or what under what circumstances they were going to not divorce. They were still together as of the finale for whatever reason or by whatever contract. Are either of them happy? Not really. So I'm going to, instead, after their divorce, partner Marcia with Gomez Adams because he is another rich guy. he's also, you know, kind of short and stocky. That's her type, apparently. And instead of Marcia, I'm going to pair Logan with either Claire from Uncoupled. That's the Marcia Gay Harden character. Again, someone who is divorcing a billionaire of her own and may want to snag a new one to replace him, or a Big Mac. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Catherine.
Yes. I did not pick this, but I do want to also echo that Tom and Shiv should definitely get divorced on Succession. Yes. They really should. Really should. It seems obvious. The pick that I originally had is controversial, and I want to be clear that it's not because anything about their marriage is necessarily bad or that the show is bad. Their marriage is good and the show is good. But the problem with being a sitcom that has to go on for many seasons is that you got to shake things up, and I think it is time for What We Do in the Shadows, Laszlo and Nadja, to split.
Interesting.
I think they have a lot of sexual energy that the show enjoyed playing with early in its run, but that they don't seem to have any idea how to take in new directions at this point. I think both of them have had more interesting dynamics with other characters in the last season. And I think actually, if they were to divorce, they could figure out way more interesting new ways for them to interact with each other than they currently do right now. Like, I think those fights would be epic. I think the like divorced reunion sex, but still divorced, would be incredible. And I just think, you know, a show's been on for a long time, time to shake things up. I think that would be a really strong way to do it. I think Laszlo should definitely have gay relationships in the future. And in particular, with the Property Brothers knockoff guy that he really enjoyed spending time with this season. I think Nadja, again, the options are endless. I think if she did sleep with Nandor once and then they hated it, that would be incredible. Again, endless options. really just a, I think, a solid way to take a dynamic that's been long in existence and throw it into the air.
That would be the Roz and Frasier episode of What We Do in the Shadows. Yes.
Sarah.
I really didn't know where to start with this one. So I decided that Johnny Boy and Livia Soprano should get divorced. He is a cheating gangster. She is a toxic shrew who loves to feel put upon. This plays right into that. He doesn't want to be married. So, like, you know, he had the kids. He's going to leave and do whatever he's going to do. So he's fine. He doesn't need to get married again. I would actually put Livia together with Junior Soprano. They're sort of similarly, there's like a high Venn overlap of the grumpy, scorekeeping, passive-aggressive, narcissistic personalities there. Mm-hmm. And they share common midlife interests and hobbies like, you know, trying to have Tony murdered. So that's, it's important to have activities that you can do together. Johnny Boy and Livia can split up. Livia and Junior can live together. You don't need to recast anyone. It's all good. Dave.
All right. Well, I have four, but it's basically one answer. And just going back through time, my answer is Homer and Marge, Edith and Archie Bunker, Fred and Wilma Flintstone, and then like Honey and Mooner, whatever the original version of that was, where it's just emotionally abusive husbands and forgiving wives, like obviously two forgiving wives. All the women now get to marry. And then as a special treat, I'm changing the nature of the universe and how we can split atoms here. But they get to marry Elisa's grandmother's vision of El Generalissimo from 30 Rock. Mm-hmm. Not the character he was, but the character her grandmother believed him to be, which was the world's greatest romantic. Mm-hmm. That's who they get to marry in the end.
Perfect.
I'd like to file for... Beautiful. Divorce.
It is time for the extra hot great canon. Presenting this week is our guest, Catherine. Catherine, take it away.
Just want to say, first of all, it's such an honor to be here and to be presenting to you, you lovely judges. So I watch a lot of television, as do we all, but I have noticed, as I'm sure all of us have in the last decade, that we are inundated with adaptations and reboots and remixes, Quantum Leap being an excellent example. The hardest thing, I think, about adaptation is to find this balance between retaining something about an original work and then also allowing the adaptation to be completely its own thing. I do not think they are successful projects unless they are their own whole, fully realized piece of art separate from the original. We are drowning in these things. So it's also a lesson that I feel like I get to learn over and over and over again, the importance of this balance between fidelity and novelty. And for me, there has really been one standout work of adaptation in the last several years of TV. It's a series that I think has set the bar for what great page-to-screen adaptations can do. And that series is this last year's Station Eleven. I think many of its episodes are canon worthy, but I have to pick one. And so the episode that I'm going to present is episode 9, which is called Dr. Chowdhury. The original Station Eleven is a post-apocalyptic novel by Emily St. John Mandel, and it follows a character named Kirsten as she lives through this world-destroying plague called the Georgia Flu. There's a kaleidoscope of interconnecting characters. There's a cartoonist who's named Miranda. There's a movie star turned Shakespearean actor named Arthur. And the novel has to hop back and forth between year zero, which is the immediate onset of this plague, and this point 20 years in the future when the world has just started to rebuild. So the novel also has this crucial character named Jeevan Chowdhury, and he finds himself comforting the young Kirsten, this protagonist, on the eve of the plague, and then they part ways and they never see each other again. The TV adaptation makes a different choice about this relationship. It has them stay together during the first year after the plague. And in some ways, that's a relatively small change from the book. It's only the first year. They still eventually get separated. Kirsten eventually grows up to join this band of musicians and actors. The rest of the novel's plot mechanism eventually kicks back into place. But episode 9 is this demonstration that that decision also fundamentally changes really important things about these two characters. For me, it makes Kirsten a more rich and more fully realized person. It makes Jeevan an actual person at all. He barely exists in the book. So one of the things that I find most impressive about episode 9 is that it is this gorgeous, heart-rending, tonally stunning showcase for Himesh Patel, who plays Jeevan. Should have won the Emmy. I just want to make that clear right now. Nobody else was as good. But it is also, on paper, a band-aid, like a very simple, very straightforward narrative band-aid for a basic story problem that the TV adaptation built for itself, which is it wanted to keep these two characters together, and then at some point, it's got to explain why they didn't stay together. Like, it just needs to provide some simple explanation for what happened that caused these two people to split apart. You can understand why the show wanted to keep them together in the first place. It is very hard to tell a story about a seven-year-old in the post-apocalyptic landscape mostly by herself. It's much easier if you have another character for her to, like, bounce dialogue off of. So having Jeevan stay around is useful, but you still need to then create some additional story reason for them to split apart. And that is what this episode does. It is a very clear question that it has to answer. The episode opens with Jeevan and Kirsten. They're alone in this cabin that they found in Michigan. It's the deep winter. They are surviving. They have made some kind of life for themselves, but it is pretty crappy. They are isolated. They're lonely. They're very deeply traumatized by what's happening. Jeevan has a ham radio that he's making these calls out to see if anybody's there. He does get a little bit of a response, but very little. Kirsten is perpetually burying herself in this copy of a graphic novel, which is called Station 11. And she's practicing knife throwing using a knife that killed Jeevan's brother, Frank, which Jeevan is understandably annoyed by. They are getting very, very sick of one another. If you could play the first clip.
Are you leaving, Jeevan?
No. I wish you hadn't kept that knife.
So after raiding some local neighborhoods for supplies, Jeevan gets attacked because Kirsten is distracted by reading this book. She should have been watching out and is not. He fends off the attack, but tempers are very frayed, and he ends up throwing this book out into the snow on the way back to their cabin. And when she discovers that the book is gone, he feels bad. He goes back out into the snow to look for it, and he is attacked by this massive wolf. I am not going to make us listen to the wolf attack and all of the moaning. It is very grim, though. The good news for Jeevan, when he returns to consciousness the next morning, is that he is being rescued. The bad news is that it is by the same person who attacked him in the neighborhood, and he is being shanghaied. Because on that ham radio, he lied, he called himself a doctor, and now he's been knocked upside the head, and he's brought to this area department store where there are at least a dozen very, very, very pregnant women, and they have gathered to await the births of their babies. We meet Terry, who's played by Tara Nicodemo, and she is the person we learn who has organized Jeevan's kidnapping. Clip 2.
These women are heroes. We lost close to 9 billion last year. Next week, we get 15 or 16 post-pandemic babies back. It's a fucking time bomb of joy. And I need your help. I need another doctor.
Another doctor.
So So we learn that Terry has borrowed Jeevan, not realizing that he misrepresented his medical credentials. The other bad news is she's had to amputate some of his toes or part of his foot. It's not totally clear after the wolf bawling. And the other bad news is that Kirsten is really alone somewhere out in the woods. She has no idea what's happened to him or whether he will ever come back. And to discover that at episode 9, that this is how they were separated, 9 out of 10 episodes, you have your whole understanding of who this person we have known as an adult, clicks into place in a way that is like the hairs on the back of my neck stand up as I think about understanding this piece of her and then sort of suddenly looking back on the rest of the show. But we also get to now understand what happens to Jeevan. If we could have the next clip.
What mauled you?
A wolf.
I know it's the girl.
Just someone I ended up with.
I got fired by a Good Samaritan in Pittsburgh. I ran a Ponzi scheme with the orderlies. Lost my medical license. So, I was home when every other doctor died. And then my husband.
My sister was a doctor. My brother died right in front of me.
And you're already qualified. The courage to bear witness to death is the job. The courage to be there.
I don't want anybody else to die. He'll get hurt. Or be in pain.
Where's your cookie?
I ate it.
That was an example of 5 centimeters. Don't worry. We have more.
That clip is just a perfect encapsulation, I think, of the tone of this episode and often of the show. It is so good at holding together human imperfection, the reality that we are all flawed beings, the desire to continue to strive to be better, and then these perfect little tiny tangible explanations and details about the world that we live in. You get creep in the background. You have this image of a cookie. You know exactly how big 5 centimeters is. Don't worry, we have more. The women in this department store, they are just as traumatized as Jeevan and Kirsten are. They are just as frightened about their futures. But what this episode gives us is this incredible, complicated, messy, moving, emotional palette that the show creates. And it gives both us, the viewers, and Jeevan this gift as a character. Yes, this horrible thing happened. Yes, you are not a perfect person. Yes, the world is dangerous. There are still ways to move forward. There are still people choosing to find these places of joy, and they're not going to deny the suffering. They're just going to pick the ways that they are going to try to make it through the next day. The crescendo of this episode is this long montage of birth scenes. Terry's prediction that they have all been synced up natally comes true, and Jeevan is pulled into helping all of these women have their babies on the floor models in the beds and bedding section of this department store. I am also not going to make you listen to birth scenes either. Again, a lot of moaning. But trust me when I tell you, I am very, very, very picky about TV birth scenes, and these are quite well done. There are no sudden one-year-olds dropped into the arms of moms. But also not everyone survives, which feels inevitable, and it feels quite realistic given the circumstances. And it is still incredibly crushing. Jeevan ends up going home with one of the women that he meets through this experience, and the episode creates this future for him. We see him becoming a doctor, not just because it was the circumstance that fell on his lap, but because he discovers that he has this vocation. And then at the end, we get this incredibly beautiful little flash forward scene where we visit Jeevan and his family just as he's about to leave for a few days on a house call. This is the last clip.
Where is Audie?
I don't know.
What'd you tell her?
That sometimes you do house calls. But she'd come back. You always do.
Oh, there you are. It's only a few days. Promise me I'll see your face again.
Promise.
Okay. I love you. Take care of your big brothers. They need you.
What we get at the end is this heart-rending echo of a couple of different things that have happened in the episode. First, he is promising his daughter that he always comes back, which is this thing that we know that he could not figure out how to do for Kirsten, and we feel that intense loss. We also have Tribe Called Quest's Can I Kick It, which is a callback to his brother and the loss of his brother in a previous episode. For me, this episode is canon worthy because I find its argument for hope in the face of total despair to be clear and powerful, but also deft. It is not a greeting card style inspirational quote version of why we as people have to move forward. It is this open arms embrace that of being a person. It insists that being a person is hard and it is still worthwhile even when terrible things happen. But for me, as somebody who is constantly inundated with reboots and adaptations, Dr. Chowdhury is specifically worthy of the canon because it is the best example I have ever seen of taking a very obvious storytelling obstacle, which is I made a choice and now I have to somehow fix the implications of that choice, and then turning it into this elegant, this remarkable gift. It weaves together a bunch of other little pieces of plot lines that I'm not going to get into, but show up as these little elegant filigrees rather than the Marvel-style structural load-bearing Easter eggs. More than anything else, it is this testament to, I think, the best-case scenario for why we retell stories and why we do it in a new way. You find new opportunities. You get to change things, but then you have to take those changes seriously. And I think if every TV adaptation could pull off what this episode pulls off, I think TV would be a better place. I think it's possible the world would also be a better place. Thank you very much.
Catherine, thank you so much. Sarah, why don't you go first?
Usually one of my criteria for a canon submission is, did I want to keep watching the show in question? And in this case, it was sort of the obverse of that I felt like this was a standalone film that worked very well on its own. And then as part of the presentation, I had not watched the show before, but as part of Catherine's presentation, I learned that this was really like a, you know, plot fix, Poochie back to the home planet situation that was pulled off with unbelievable, not flair even, just like confidence and competence. And there are a number of balancing acts in this episode, tonally, In terms of the pacing, there are some beautiful, startling shots that the production seems to feel that it needs to do, but also is not going to stand back and smell its own fart after doing it. Like, first of all, Sudden 1-Year-Olds is a great band name and someone should take that. I will be claiming load-bearing Easter egg. Thank you very much. but like when he goes into the house, he's looking around for supplies. He finds that old joint and like cheerfully starts smoking it and is like playing this Casio that has been programmed with kids' voices. And then you finally get that reverse shot and there's the homeowner's corpse on the couch. And there's a reference to it later, but like to save it for exactly there. And then to have him sort of clock it, but then return to what he's doing, like this show's understanding of that sort of like blast radius, emotional blast radius of a collective, like global trauma, I think is outstanding. And like everybody's responses, like character wise and dialogue wise, kind of tracked with what I think we all understand as the world in the last 3 to 5 years. But again, it's not necessarily standing back to be like, eh, like there are some shot compositions that they should be proud of, but they're not waiting around for you to say so. The courage to bear witness to death is the job. Like I just had to pause it. And like, it was just one of those moments in a narrative where like it puts its hand on your chest and shoves you back in your seat and you like attention must be paid. This was really an experience to watch and interact with, not just as, you know, a citizen of 2022, but also someone who watches a lot of this stuff, someone who thinks a lot about how narrative is constructed and manipulated, especially in the true crime space, that there were, that like there are ways to report on grief and trauma that are not that are sort of beautiful but also terrifying at the same time, and this was an example of that. Excellent presentation and excellent acting. I think the actor who plays young Kirsten is also
astoundingly good. Oh my god.
She doesn't have that like moppety thing. She looks like she's, you know, a real child, basically. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this really is sort of a triumph of like both self-contained storytelling, but also apparently serving a larger story that was a sort of a pleasure to watch and see how they were going to get from one end of it to the other. And like, oh my God, a group birthing scene with a disgraced doctor. Like, how many ways could this go wrong? I'm out of fingers and toes, but they didn't put a foot wrong somehow. Like, the things that didn't happen that you're sort of bracing for, having watched enough TV, are canon worthy in and of themselves, sort of. Like, you can't prove a negative, but like everything that could have gone wrong didn't. Yeah. And that's also wonderful. And you can't beat A Tribe Called Quest as your outro. You just can't. And can't do I don't it. Think anyone should try. This was really fascinating, but also immersive. I don't love that word, but sometimes you gotta.
Yep.
Tara.
This was a show I knew was good because everyone said so. And at the time that it started airing in late 2021, I knew what it was about and thought, I'll come back to this at a later time in my life. And Catherine said, that time is now. And so I hadn't watched it either. This is the second week in a row that I knew none of the co-hosts had watched the canon show before. Last week, Catherine, it was the dance episode of Pen 15, the season one finale. Mm. And that sailed in as well. I say as well. I think I know how this is going. This was wonderful. I didn't know anything. I hadn't read the book either, so I didn't know all the story stuff that Catherine has explained beautifully in her presentation, which, I mean, just makes the masterfulness of it so much more remarkable because you would watching it without that background, you would never know that any part of this was not in the book, like from their relationship on down. It all feels perfectly formed and yet all, you know, inevitable but also organic, you know?
Yeah, Exactly.
It's this reminded me of The Leftovers in terms of like it's bleak but hopeful. I mean, calling the mass birth a time bomb of joy that they have to look forward to was, you know, perfect in that, in as we heard in the clip. But also, you know, it doesn't, as Catherine said, the births happen and they're wonderful, but everyone doesn't make it, and that's to, I guess, be expected, you know, statistically. And what we have to reckon with there is, you know, the woman who dies is one of the two that we really see Jeevan interacting with. One is Lena, who he ends up with at the end, and the other is Rose, who, you know, he's trying to sneak out at some point when he finds her at the door and she's looking for someone named Dave, waiting for him to come and find her. And she is the one who dies, and Dave shows up at the end, and you assume that it's going to be her partner, whether the child's father or otherwise. And it's a kid, like a young kid, a real young kid. It's her, Kirsten. And, you know, they tell him what happened, and they say, you know, do you want something to eat before you go? And he says there's no before and leaves. And it harkens back to something else that Rose had said, which is we need new words for these relationships.
Yeah. And I love that part.
He leaves and they don't try and stop him, because when you're in a situation like this, you can't rescue everyone. You can't, like, Terry's already done a lot. You know, she's not taking on more than she can handle in this, you know, ad hoc birthing center. Seeing where he ends up at the end, plus a tribe called Quest, like,
you know,
I mean, and so we, Dave and I did go back and, you know, we started this, we watched the pilot yesterday, and so now I know that Jeevan is on the rare culture writer to doctor track. You don't see that a lot. Congratulations to him. Couldn't be me, literally, but this was extraordinary. The pilot was wonderful too. I regret that I took so long to watch it, but I had to come to it in my own time, and this feels
or be
right.
forced to by me
or be forced to by Catherine. So Catherine,
Cannon's
thank
gonna
you.
Cannon.
Dave,
it's nice that this episode is a bit of a capsule, so I feel like even watching the pilot that there is a lot of discovery still to be had, even though, you know, we know what happened in the ninth episode. I still feel like I am, like, set adrift in this world, and I'm not quite sure what's what. The one thing nobody mentioned that I thought I'd just mention just before we vote on it is the portrayal of everybody in the post-pandemic world, where they're all exhausted and they have this stoicism that they just have to put up to survive. But it's punctuated by these moments of like humanity, of caring, of empathy, such as, like, you know, like you realize, oh, fuck, yeah, I really got to go back and get that comic. And just the events that set off seems extremely real to me, you know, like just when you are facing adversity and the odds are so stacked against you, that you build that wall immediately, but, you know, the trick is not to stay behind it all the time. And the show, I thought, did a really good job of portraying how people would deal with just overwhelming, just sense of dread, sense of, like, a incredibly uncertain future, you know, just harking back to the pilot. One of the great scenes is, you know, as they're progressing through the first hours, first days of the pandemic, like one of the great shots is just like this hallway flickering into darkness as the earth no longer has electricity. And that, like, those moments, imagining yourself like, oh, all the things that depend on electricity are now unavailable to you. Immediately, you're like your back tenses up, your shoulders go up. And I feel like that sort of reaction, that emotional reaction as it flows through time to episode 9 was in full effect in everybody's portrayals. And I love the kid actor in this.
She's incredible.
She's really good. She's, I mean, so granted, good. It is also a relatively stoic portrayal, but it works really well. I was super impressed. And
compared to like Carl from The Walking Dead, where you're just like, yeah, exactly. Like, this is not a child anyone has ever known.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
She also looks nothing like Mackenzie Davis, who she's going to be when she grows up, but it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
sometimes
it's like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Let's put this to the official vote. Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
We do not need a new word for yes. It is a yes from me.
Tara?
Yes for me as well.
All right. So. Yay! Happy music. That means Station 11, Season 1, Episode 9. Dr. Chowdhury, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time for the winner and the loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
Well, occasionally we will call it out when yet another TV show gets a rewatch podcast featuring its stars as its hosts. And I think we have now reached peak that because it's happening to Grimm, the NBC show with Road Rules alumnus David Gentile. It is getting a rewatch podcast. Congratulations to Grimm. Can we please stop this now? It's really past enough.
The extra M is for mediocre.
And our loser of the week?
Speaking of extra letters, because Dan and I have been giggling about this person hogging extra letters, former New York One meteorologist Eric E-R-I-C-K Adame, so Adam with an E on the end, has been terminated by the network after appearing on an adult cam site. He is, I think, right now suing the person who blew up his spot to both Spectrum, which is the boss, and his mom. But he had a big apology on Instagram. And like, he's a good weather guy. He's very cheery. I don't think he should have to apologize for anything, given that everyone on this campsite, like, it's not a campsite involving minors, as far as I know. So it's like, who cares? He could still stand in front of a green screen and tell you if it's going to rain. What's the big deal?
What about moral integrity? Like, what? I need somebody who has never had sex in their lives to be telling me whether it's cloudy.
And raining what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Men. And fucking hallelujah. Good for him. But yeah, the real loser here is Spectrum New York One, because he was a good weatherman. And I mean, if any of their weather folk are going to be on a campsite, I think he was the guy. He took that one for the team, as it were.
Oh, boy.
And I hope that they change their minds, or that he sues them to get back on the air, because he was good.
Speaking of big losers taking one for the team, do you know what time it is?
You're welcome.
All right, everybody, this is the ninth game time of the season. It's been a little while since we've had a regulation game due to special episodes and non-regulation games by Tara. So let's get into it. Tara has three. Sarah has three. Valued guests have two. Very tight season. Today we are playing Quantum Leaping from all the smart eggs over at EHG Assist on Twitter. In Quantum Leaping, I will describe a TV scene that Sam Beckett has just jumped into from his zero knowledge situational unawareness point of view. You tell me the character he just jumped into for 3 points. If you need a hint, I will tell you the name of the show in question, after which an answer is worth 1 point.
Okay.
You only get one guess, so use it wisely. Here is an example. You materialize on water skis, water spraying in your face and your fancy leather jacket. There's a jump ramp coming up rapidly, and there's something in the cage in front of the ramp. Oh boy. Who is that character?
That's the Fonz.
The Fonz from Happy Days, yes.
That was Happy Days.
No, they weren't all Happy Days.
All right, let's get the steel meal situation, please, Tara.
Oh my God, everyone has so many steel meals. Yep. Sarah D. Bunting has 13 steel meals. I have 9 steel meals. Valued guest, Catherine, you have 10 plus Eric's meal for a total of 11. So if you want to steal that, just get in there real fast. Say steel meal before Dave gives the correct answer when someone else gets theirs wrong.
Okay.
Yep. All right, so to pick you to see the order today.
We will start with Sarah.
All right. Our order will be Sarah, then Catherine, then Tara. Are we ready to play Quantum Leaping?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting, your first question is from me. You materialize and your view tells you that you're high above the ground. You're wearing a floral muumuu and you're hanging over a rumbling industrial tank of some sort. Everyone is in a panic. Oh, boy.
A floral muumuu? Can you read the beginning of the question again? I'm sorry.
You materialize and your view tells you that you are high above the ground.
You are wearing a floral muumuu and you're hanging over a rumbling industrial tank of some sort. Everyone is in a panic. Oh boy.
I need a hint.
The TV show in question is The Simpsons. For 1 point, name the character.
Jesus. Homer.
Yes, Homer Simpson is correct. And he falls into the tank, clogs it up, averting a nuclear meltdown.
Sure, he sure does.
All right, to Catherine. This question is from Kimberly. You materialize in a city apartment with two men. A third man storms in, slams some money down on the table and says, I'm out. Oh, boy. Who is that character? I'll read that again for you. You materialize in a city apartment with two men. A third man storms in, slams some money down on the kitchen counter and says, I'm out. Oh, boy. Who is that character?
Is it Kramer?
No, what? It is not. That Kramer is the person who slams it down and says, I'm out.
Steel meal.
Steel meal situation.
Elaine Bennis?
Elaine Bennis, yes. Three men described from the point of view. One woman left, Elaine Bennis.
How many
right.
points do I get for that?
Get two. One, she didn't take the hint.
It's 3 points.
Three points, yeah.
Oh, it's three? I'm sorry, thank you.
All right, yeah, three, then 1 point.
Sorry. Okay, got it, yep.
All right, Tara, here's your first question from Sham.
Okay.
You materialize in a dank castle and see an older man on the shitter with a crossbow bolt in him. You're holding the crossbow. Oh, boy.
Oh, God. Well.
Who are you?
Yeah. Am I Tyrion Lannister?
You are.
Okay, good.
Nice.
Correct. From Game of Thrones. Back to Sarah. You materialize on stage in a tiny theater and some lumbering galoot just walked up to you and slapped you in the face. Oh, boy.
Theater. Lumbering galoot. Hint.
This is from the TV show How I Met Your Mother.
And I got slapped in the face? Character
yes.
names. Galoot. Ted? I don't know, people.
Steel meal?
Steel meal from Catherine.
Is it Barney?
It is Barney. Barney Stinson is the correct answer there. That is from...
okay.
Season 2, Episode 16, Stuff. All right, Catherine, here's your full question. It is the second and last question from yours truly. You materialize in a stark, cordoned recording space with a small camera crew. Your pants are around your ankles, and there's a squealing pig directly in front of you. Oh, boy. I will accept a title, a moniker for this.
A Dave Fave.
Is this... Prime Minister of England?
Yes, Prime Minister from England fucking a pig on Black Mirror is the correct
hate
answer
that
for
episode,
3 points.
But yes, that's fine.
I love
yes.
that episode so much. All right, Tara, yeah. Shan brings you this. Shan is our most prolific contributor this week.
Thank you, Shan.
You materialize in a house wearing a ski mask and there's a body on the floor. You're suddenly attacked by a tiny girl in kung fu clothes leaping about trying to kill you. Oh boy.
I'm Barry.
You are Barry from Barry, correct. Back to Sarah D. Bunting. This one from Ed. You materialize in a ground floor apartment, and a detective is walking around pointing at a hole in the window and muttering, fuck. Oh, boy. Two answers I'll accept here from that point of view.
Bunk or McNulty?
Yes, Bunk or McNulty, yes. All right. Back to Catherine. You materialize in a suburban backyard holding a rifle and smoking a cigarette. You seem to be wearing a pink robe. Oh, boy.
I'm Betty.
You are Betty Draper from the Mad Men. The Mad Men. They're so mad.
They're so mad.
Tara.
Yeah.
You materialize in a teenager's bedroom. You look down to see a shiny, gold, and, well, ill-fitting shirt, to put it nicely. The teenager is pissed you aren't appreciated of her hard work. Oh, boy.
I'm Theo Huxtable.
You are Theo Huxtable.
Wearing
Theo
a knockoff Huxtable. Gordon Gartrell.
There you go. Sarah D. Bunting, this one's from Shan. You materialize standing in front of a bathroom mirror and then slowly pull off a wig to reveal a huge scar that runs the length of your bald head. Oh, boy.
Oh, Dr. Kimberly Shaw.
From Melrose Plays, good for 3. Back to Catherine, another one from Ed. You materialize in a city apartment and feel a chill. You look down and realize you're naked and standing in a very revealing position. Suddenly, a woman comes into the apartment holding lemonade and looking shocked. Oh boy.
I can picture the pose.
You can get the show as a hint if you're not sure. Or you can just go for the three. Roll the bones.
Yeah. I'm just going to go. Am I Ross in Friends? No.
You're not. You are Joey from Friends.
God, close.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
You materialize standing in an office building stairwell, staring at a whole bunch of post-it notes. There's a phone in your hand and somebody answers on the other end. Oh boy.
I'm Kim Wexler.
You are Kim Wexler from Better Call Saul. Correct. That's from season 2, episode 5, Rebecca. Sarah D. Bunting. Shan's back with this one. You materialize in the middle of a starship bridge, looking at a man on a view screen with tubes and mechanical devices protruding from his body. He tells you that resistance is futile. Oh boy. Materialize in the middle of a starship bridge, looking at a man on a view screen. What's the start of that?
Which one is this? I hope I am Picard.
Oh. Incorrect. You are William T. Riker looking at the former Picard, now Locutus of Borg. Okay. Yes, that's why he's in the middle. He is now in charge of the Enterprise.
Middle. Got it.
All right, Catherine. You materialize waking up on a beautiful morning alone. You get up to look for someone else and find a note on your computer. I'm sorry, I can't. Don't hate me. Oh boy.
Am I Carrie Bradshaw?
Oh, you are Carrie sure Bradshaw.
Are you ever?
Correct.
I was just on the other day. So satisfying.
This will take us into our score break. It is for Tara.
Okay.
You materialize waking up next to someone you presume to be your wife. And who's that other wife with those nice sweaters you thought you were running an inn in Vermont with? Oh, boy.
I'm Bob from Newhart.
Bob from Newhart. I'm going to accept that. That's,
Loudon?
Yeah, Loudon, Bob Hartley, maybe technically. Okay. It's very, you know, fluid with that series finale ending for both Newhart and the Bob Newhart show, kind of. So we'll give you that one there. All right, that is it for the first chunk of the game. Scores, please, Tara.
It is a very close game. Sarah and Catherine are tied with 10 each. I have 50.
All right, let's get right back into it. Sarah Debunding, another one from Shan. You materialize running really fast through the woods. You come face to face with Bigfoot. Oh, boy.
Really fast through the woods? Hint.
Running. Really fast through the woods. Mm-hmm. This is the $6 million man.
I guess you're not going to accept the $6 million answer.
Probably not.
I feel like I always guess the wrong man, Bionic versus $6 million, but let's try Steve Austin.
You are correct. Steve Austin is the right name. All right, this is question 17.
It's ready.
For Catherine. You materialize waking up in a car. The radio is playing, but it's very staticky. You roll down a window and dirt falls in. In the back seat is a bloody unconscious man with a beard. You're buried alive. Oh boy.
Am I Temperance Brennan from Bones?
You are.
Wow, nice.
By special request, that question was put in there. From season 2, episode 9 of Bones.
I was like, am I Bones from... But no, she has a name.
For more Bones, check out the Bone Zone.
That's right. Correct.
Tara.
Yep.
You materialize in a line along with a bunch of other people wearing identical tracksuits. You're wearing a penny with the number 16 over your tracksuit. In front of you are two glass bridges. Someone steps on one of the bridges only to have the panel break, dropping them to their death. Oh boy, I will accept a character name or a number for the answer here.
I don't remember anyone's number, but that's Squid Game.
It is Squid Game, yeah.
I don't remember anyone's name either.
All right, Stumel, for anybody who knows, we were looking for Song Young or 456.
Oh, of course.
Mr. Squid? No? Okay.
No. This is question 19. Back to Sarah. You materialize driving a speedboat. Directly in front of you, a costumed man is standing on top of a sperm whale. There's no time to stop or turn. Oh, boy.
Am I Archer? Don't know.
Incorrect?
Catherine's thinking about it.
She's thinking about
it. I know. Wait, can you read the question again?
You materialize driving a speedboat. Directly in front of you, a costumed man is standing on top of a sperm whale. There is no time to stop or turn. Oh, boy.
I will steal, but okay. I'm actually not sure which character is driving the boat, but I'm going to guess that it's Butcher from The Boys.
Yes. Butcher from The Boys is correct. Good job. Good 3-point steal there. All right. Back to Catherine for your full question. You materialize in the soundless void of space, slowly sure. drifting through the gap between two spaceships without the benefit of a spacesuit. As you near the closed airlock of the nearest vessel, your vision blurs. Oh, boy.
Oh, shoot. I know.
I gave you this question because it was on the list, and I know neither of Tara Sarah stood any chance of getting it. I thought maybe you might.
Hmm. I think it's for all mankind, but I can't remember.
I put you out of your misery. It is not From All Mankind.
Okay.
It is from The Expanse. It is Naomi from The Expanse.
Nope. The other person in my house
would have guessed
that.
Battlestar. So.
Yeah.
All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
You materialize somewhere pitch dark. You're starting to suffocate. You're stuck. You try to get out, but you can't. You're inside of a fridge. Oh, boy.
Oh, I'm Punky Brewster's friend whose name was Sherry?
Yes.
Nice. Full. Okay.
Couldn't that also
be... I was like, Nick Stokes? Whoops. No.
I think that could also be Veronica Mars, right? Wasn't she stuck in a fridge for a while?
We'll also accept Veronica Mars for that question. Sarah D. Bunting, Miles Gordon 9 has this for you. You materialize waking up on an empty TV stage in a wedding dress holding takeout. A man wearing a large TJ gold chain walks over asking... Did a Korean person die?
I don't know.
Nope. That answer is Liz Lemon from 30 yes. Rock from
this
the Seinfeld Mission episode.
Know that. This is my ham napkin, is what she says about that dress.
All right, back to Catherine. You materialize in a courtroom. The judge looks at you sternly and says, "What do you have to say in your defense?" A man in a white suit standing next to you whispers in your ear, Tubalcain. Oh, boy.
Tubalcain. Okay, I have no idea.
Do you want the show?
No.
Okay.
don't even want the hint.
No.
All right. That was from News Radio. That's Jimmy James.
And the Tubalcain, never going to happen.
The one word that will win you any court case because of all the secret society stuff. Tara.
Yep.
This will take us into our second score break. We're near the end of our game. You materialize walking down the hallway of a very expensive-looking office. There are three people walking behind you. You're carrying a sword, and you're made out of felt. Oh, boy.
I thought I had it, and then I didn't at all. Can I have a hint, please?
This is from a TV show called Angel.
Oh, am I Puppet Angel?
You're Puppet Angel, yes, you are correct.
Puppet Angel.
All right, wow, everybody has one question left, so let's get scores.
Oh, shit.
It's still pretty close. Sarah has 11, Catherine has 16, I have 19.
All right, we can still force a tie mathematically. Let's see how it goes. Sarah D. Bunting, here is your last question. You materialize standing on a sidewalk outside a store. You have a microphone in your hand. You hear a helicopter overhead and look up to see dark objects falling from the sky. You start to run as they hit the ground near you like wet sacks of cement. Oh, boy. Who are you?
I am, oh my God, I always guess the wrong character name first, but I think I employed at WKRP in Cincinnati and Mr. Les Nessman.
You are 3 points. Nicely done. It's from the famous Turkeys Away episode.
Yeah.
All right, Catherine, you need to nail this one.
I'm feeling that your odds are extremely good. Here we go.
We'll see.
From Kimberly, you materialize in the immediate aftermath of a vehicular accident. You crash an RV into some cactus. You're wearing only tidy whities and a gas mask. Oh boy.
Am I Walter White?
You are Walter White from Breaking Bad. So that
we
ties
are all
it
tied up.
So Tara needs 1 point here.
I do.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Our last question is from Shan. You materialize at a funeral. As the Reverend begins the eulogy for the deceased, who was apparently a clown, you begin to giggle and laugh uncontrollably. Oh boy.
I'm Mary Richards.
You are Mary Richards from the Mary Tyler Moore Show episode, Chuckles the Clown. All right, that's regulation. Let's get the scores, please.
Fine showing from everyone in that challenging game. Sarah finished with 14 points. Catherine had 19. I have 22.
All right, nicely done. I have a steel mill opportunity here. We will use the tiebreaker that we don't need. It is a little bit different. The format's the same, but the answer is a little bit different. I'm going to let you figure out, see if we can get it. Here we go. First person to shout out the answer wins. You materialize standing behind a podium and you can't stop sweating. The guy behind the podium next to yours looks like he was bred in a Harvard lab, and the harsh studio lights just make him look even more perfect. Who did you jump into from this television event?
Event?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Television event.
Harvard lab.
You materialize standing behind a podium.
Yeah.
And you can't stop sweating.
Yeah.
The guy behind the podium next to yours looks like he was bred in a Harvard lab, and the harsh studio lights just make him look even more perfect.
Am I Richard Nixon?
You are Richard Nixon. This is a 1960 presidential debate.
Wow.
Tara,
I was going to go Bartlett if nobody said anything.
Wins but, another steel bill, but also
let Dick be Dick.
Today's game.
Tara.
Tara. Thank you, everybody, at EHG Assist on Twitter for your help. I thought of that game idea like at the 11th hour, so thank you very much for helping me fill in
all those questions.
Yes.
All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We took our time evaluating the new Quantum Leap before going around the dial with stops at Los Espookies, Reservation Dogs, Halt and Catch Fire, and Journeyman. We discovered Dave will not hate Werewolf by Night, and Catherine got Station 11's 9th episode into canon, but you knew that because you've been reading the comic. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from at EHG Assist. Next up, Who Should Die on EEHG, and a look back on the first 3 episodes of Andor on the next EHG Prime. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I ate it.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Fuck you, Frank.
Wow. And Catherine Van Arendonk.
I'm never getting into that Quantum Leap machine.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
No. Wait! Stop! One. Oh!